Okay, good morning. We continue in our second class in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. And we've been introduced to the primary characters in this perek, to Elkanah, the Levi, who is sanctifying God's name and bringing Jews to the Mishkan in Shiloh, his two wives, Chana and Penina, Chana who does not have any children, Penina who has children. And we were reading from the Sefer Mezakeh HaRabim from the altar, from the Vardik, who is discussing in the seventh chapter the way in which one individual is able to impact on the Jewish people. So I just wanted to finish reading from his book for just a couple more minutes, and then we'll continue back inside the Sefer. Okay. So after discussing, you know, how single-handedly he's able to impress upon people that they should return back to a proper observance of Yiddishkeit, specifically in going to the Mishkan, continue what he says. We thus see the power of self-commitment to be so great as to enable an individual with rightness of intent, genuineness of deed, and strength of spirit to be, as it were, like a locomotive which pulls many cars after it. In like manner, he, Elkanah, by wholehearted pulling, can turn the whole world back whence they had strayed. So that's Elkanah. So this applies to every individual who would serve in this way. If he consecrates himself and his family to the cause of truth, he too, though he be only one individual, can infect the entire world. For though there are many who court the truth and who are inclined to the fulfillment of Torah and the attainment of perfection, they are without anyone who would direct them to the pure, unadulterated truth and would serve them as an example to follow. But when the individual becomes the light of Israel and the mighty banner, hammer, It is given him to establish everywhere an outpost of Torah and groups for the observance of mitzvahs and the study of halachas. This is all provided that the individual remains an individual and not one who looks back to see whether the masses are following him. Very important. You have to know, you have to just lead. And if they follow or not, that really isn't as important. You have to know you're doing the right thing, and you lead by doing the right thing, and then those that will be inspired will follow to lead by seeing what the masses are doing and do what they want to do. That's not called leadership. His task is to cling fast to the fulcrum of truth, and the masses will come of themselves. For it is only the true individualist who, like Elkanah, gives his very all to draw the masses to the unassimilated truth, that is, vouchsafed the sight of the true society whose sole striving is directed to the will of Hashem. It is indeed a fact of experience that all ideals originate with individuals, though each individual has it within himself to be like Moses, our teacher, and uplift the masses, or like Yeruvim ben Nevat, and lead them to sin. I mean, it was one individual that caused 50 million people to die 60 years ago. One individual. So that's all it takes. The fact remains, however, that it is with individuals that the matter rests. There's no question then that the true individualist must strive to turn the balance of the world to the side of merit. And when one finds himself in a place of Torah, he must pay heed to all that transpires within it. For a single act may turn the balance in favor of the community or against God, against it, God forbid. Every individual must feel it is his obligation then to rid himself of all his illusionary desires and to give his all to the sanctification of the name of Hashem. So that's very well put by the altar, exactly how you can see there's so much focus on individuals and how much they can accomplish. Okay. So let's go back inside. We just finished.
I'm sorry, but that's not leadership. That's role model. I mean, a truly effective leader has people following him. truly effective leader, if he's going off on doing the right thing according to who he is and nobody's following him, then he's not a leader. Maybe a good role model.
The truth of the matter is, you only can try. Success is not in your hands. A good leader may not succeed. The people could be so wicked that they're not accepting any leadership. Right? You know, you're looking as results. Results is up to Hashem. Results is up to Hashem. You know, you can try your best. You can role model your best. At the end of the day, the people don't want. But at least you should be the one doing what's proper. Hashem should bless you. People will follow. But we don't. Can't really measure good lead. Now, maybe the person is not a good role model. Then he's not a good leader. And maybe people won't follow because of that. Could have the best leader in the world, and people don't listen. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu was a good leader. Couldn't get him into Israel, could he? Guess he wasn't a good leader. Of course he was a good leader. The people were impossible. The fact that they didn't fall apart, you know, they say, well, he didn't, what, bottom line, did he take them to Israel or not? No. I mean, he wasn't a good leader. You got to lead, and you're compassionate, you do everything that a leader should do. But the main thing is be the role model. So that's all you can do. That's all you can do. In the secular world, success is based on how many people are following you. In Yiddishkeit, you know, we don't base things on that kind of success, because that is beyond Hashem and beyond every individual's free will choice. They choose not to follow a tzaddik who is doing things in a way, in a proper, in a pleasant way. Just say, Rabbi, I'm just not interested. So what can you do?
What's the word he uses? What's the Hebrew for leader, according to
him? I don't know. I don't know if he even uses the word. I don't know if necessarily that word is, he's saying is whether, the question is whether the individual is capable of exerting his influence upon society. You can call him a leader in Hebrew. To impact. Can you impact? Yes, Alkana could impact. You know, he could impact. You may try, you may not impact. It depends on, you know, Hashem has a little bit of what to say as well. But here you see, it was one guy, all he did was say, I'm doing the pilgrimage. He went to city, slept in the street, and said, what are you doing? He said, this is what I'm doing. Why don't you go also? And they followed. Is that a leader? Is it an official political leader? No. He's an individual. He's an individual role model who influences. That's all we ask for. You don't have to be a leader. So if we have a Shabbos inspire in a week and a half, that everybody should try to invite a secular Jew to their Friday night table. So you try to influence. You try your best. You know, maybe we should sleep in the streets on a Thursday night and get people to say, what are you doing? I'm trying to find people to invite for Shabbos. Not in December. Okay, now we finished Pasuk Gimel. There was one more point in Pasuk Gimel. Let's just read the Pasuk. The Pasuk said they would come from Yontif. He would go up from Yontif to Yontif, lihishtachavos v'lizboach l'Hashem, to bow down and to bring offerings to Hashem. So the Radak explains the two verbs, lihishtachavos, to bow down, v'lizboach, and to bring offerings. So Radak says, lishtachavos, as we said already, means to pray, because they would pray in the position of bowing down. But the Medrash brings down, says, you see from here that the mitzvah of prayer is equal to the bringing of offerings, because they're worded together, lishtachavos, v'lizboach, to bow down in prayer and to bring offerings. That's what Rabbi Lo, b'shem Rabbi Yitzchok, says. The Rabbanan over there in the Medrash say, no, Chaviva Tvila Yosem Mikol Karbanos. Prayer is even more precious than all offerings, because it says Lishtachavos first, to bow down, and then it says to bring offerings. So you see from here that praying to Hashem is even greater than bringing offerings to Hashem as well. All right. Pasuk Dalet. Okay, this is what happened all the time. Pasuk Dalet. Vahiyayom, and it was on this day. What day? We'll have to see. Vayizbach Elkana. So Elkana brings an offering. Kenosad lepnina ishto ulachol boneha ubenoseha manos. And he gives to his wife and to all his sons and daughters, he gives to Penina his wife and to all his sons and daughters manos, portions. In other words, you have a korban, you have a big barbecue, everyone gets a nice piece of meat. So the Malbim says, what's vayi hayom? What's hayom this day? Meaning to say that when that day came, of the day of the holiday, it was a particular holiday, that's when he went to, because in Pasuk Gimel it says his custom was that he always would go from Yontif to Yontif. So it was on one of those Yontif days that he gives to Penina and his, and her children, because we know there's no simcha without meat. Right? In halacha, it says Paskin, the person is happy when they have a nice meat meal. So much for the vegetarians. And a woman, the husband has to give her joy. So, that's what he does for them. Now, what exactly was the holiday? So, the Radak brings down from the Medrash. He says, say, Yom HaShel Atzeres. This was the day of Atzeres. So, that would be Shavuos. It was Shavuos that, that this story happened. We have to know what's the connection, to this specific event, and Shavuos we'll have to think about. Okay, continuing on in Pasuk Hey, but, Ulchana, what did he give Chana? Yitein mona achas apoyim. He gave her one portion apoyim. Now there's gonna be a lot of explanations of what the word apoyim means, but let's finish the Pasuk. Why did he give her, it was obviously a better amount. Ki eschana ahev, because he loved Chana. Hashem sogar rachma, and Hashem had closed her womb that she can't have any children. So what is this? Mona achas apoyim. One present, that's apoyim. So the Targum says that it is what? A choice piece. Chad bochir. A choice piece. The Ralbag says, apoyim literally means, apoyim, faces. Faces. It was a double-faced piece. What does double-faced piece mean? Well, somebody's got a piece of meat that's good on one side, but got lots of fat on the other side. So this one was a double face. It was like both sides was mamish full with meat. Like a really good piece on both sides. You know, you don't gotta turn it around. It's like mamish a fantastic piece. Rashi says that he gave it something that is worthy to be accepted with a safer panim yafot. With a good, cheerful face. In other words, you put the plate down and go, gonna get a good portion, right? Somebody said, Shabbos, you give the portions out, give a portion to one kid, they say, how come we got such a small portion? Well, you get a grumpy face with the portion. Then you come, you know, at the Pesach Hotel, like, when they brought the ribs out, man, everybody was smiling, you know. They brought these momish ribs with a good, sauce, and like, and you look around the room, it's like they're all smiling. There was tons of ribs and big pieces of meat. That's what it means. You get a pleasant countenance. It creates a pleasant face. What? Well, whatever. But not, a lot of times people were grumpy. They said, well, just little pieces. Give you a bowl of soup with three spoonfuls of soup in a bowl. If you ever notice how in fancy places, they don't have bowls like you have in your house. In your house, you have a bowl that's deep, you know. You could put in a few quarts of soup in it. The fancy places, they make it look wide on the top, then they dip it in, and then it comes in. And really, it holds like mamish, one ladle full of soup. And that's it. And four spoons, you're finished. And that's the fancy restaurant, right? So you're not smiling when you see that kind of meal. When you see a big chunk of meat, so you give her a good zaftik piece. That she would be very happy with this. Now the Radak and the Malbim follows up on this idea, says a totally different. Now it's not, they're not contradicting each other, but he says a totally different interpretation. He used the word apayim from the word charon af, which means anger. So he says that when he would give her the peace, it would be with sadness and upsetness. Because when he would give it to her, he would show that he was sad. Why? Because, as if to say, the Chazal is saying, as if I couldn't give you anything more than this. I want to be able to give you a child. I mean, you know, it doesn't seem that he had a problem giving the children, but she had. But let me say, it's unfortunate, that's the best I can do for her. You're sad, I want to make you happy. All I can do is give you a big rib steak. But, you know, and it's upsetting for a man of his means and his Yerushalayim. He would want to give his wife, you want a child, I wish I could give you a child, and I can't. And it was an upsetness that he had. And so this portion would arouse his being, even get angry. And he was angry double, as the rest of the pasuk says, because Hashem closed her womb, as if there's nothing he could do about it. Right? She medically couldn't have any children. So it's very frustrating. And also because he loved her so much. So since he wanted her so much to have children, and there was nothing he could do about it, so it's like, oh, this is the only thing I could give her. Oh. So that kind of, even though he gave her a pace, please, that would want to make her smile, but obviously it couldn't make her smile if he's presenting it with such a sadness that he was giving to her. So this would mar the festivities. It's a yontif. Yontif is supposed to have simcha. You come to the base, you come to the Mishkan, bring an offering, you get close to Hashem, look at your blessings, he gives to Penina and all the children she has, comes to Chana, he wants to make it up to her, give her a better peace than anybody else. At the end of the day, if you can't really, you know, make a good face, it's hard to make it happen. And therefore, we could say, and things were bad for another reason, as we go on to Pasuk Vav and Zion. V'chi asota tzorata, and her tzara. Tzara means a second wife. When a man has two wives, the relationship that one wife has to the other is called a tzara. It's called a pain. Right? It's not easy when a man has to share his attention between two wives. You know, two wives don't necessarily get along. So the Hebrew word for that is called a tzara. It's called a tzara. Also, it makes it constrains things. So her tzara, meaning Chana's tzara, Penina would get her angry, and gam kas, and she would also be angry even without Penina. Bara vur hareima, for the reasons that would make her sad, ki sagar Hashem bad rachma, because Hashem closed her womb. So the Malbim explains, what does this mean exactly? She had a double anger. Anger on the one hand, because Penina got her angry. We'll explain in a minute how. And number two, she was angry because of the fact that she was always complaining about her lot. Why? Because Hashem closed her womb. So the Rambam explains very nicely, some nice psychology. He says that when they would come to the Mishkan, right, see a lot of interesting things here. They would come to the Mishkan, and their intention was to bow down and to pray for what? That Hashem should bless Chana with a child. So whenever they would come to the Mishkan, they would always remember the problem that she has. She couldn't, like, divert her mind from this. They would come to the Mishkan. Yeah, it's a mitzvah yontif to go to the Mishkan. You have to go to the Mishkan. You go to the Mishkan, it's a great place to pray. So you go to pray, what are you praying for? You're praying for children. So it's so many years that I haven't had a child, and we've tried, and we've tried, and we've tried. So all it does is bring up more angst and reminding her of all the years that she hasn't had any children. So after she'd finished praying, it would impress upon her how she has not gotten ever pregnant. And on top of that, the other wife would give it to her as well to make her unhappy. So it was a double reason. So all the Yomim Tovim were mired. Now, you could say, I don't want to, you know, I can only speculate, and I wouldn't say. But, you know, a lot of times when you see people getting involved in very special mitzvahs that other people aren't involved in, is because they have an agenda, a negius. But as a smart rabbi once told me, sometimes it's a kosher agenda. Sometimes agendas are bad, and sometimes agendas are kosher. For example, let's say a community has no special education schools for Jewish children. So then what happens, there's this family who's wealthy, they never thought about contributing money for that, and then God blesses them with a special needs child. Then I said, you know, it's really important that this community has a school for special needs children. It's like, Shkoyach, where were you all these years when other people needed it? Well, I didn't need it, so I didn't consider it. Now that I have a special needs child, I will do it. So what are you going to say? They're doing something bad? No, they're spending a lot of money to open up a special needs school. Ah, but they're really only doing it because of their kid? No. Mela, what can you do? But it's going to help many other people. And then even when their child grows up and is through the system, they've been sensitized to the fact that special needs children need help. So usually a lot of these great projects happen because of that. It's very rare that a regular person with no problems decides to take the cause with the people with problems and invests his whole life into it. Usually you want the school to be good because your kid has the special needs. And if the school will be a good school, your kid will benefit. And okay, it's good everybody else benefits. Maybe that's the only way God gets you to build it. Maybe that's the whole reason he gave you the special needs child. Okay, there can be people with special needs children, they don't do anything. So we call that a kosher agenda. So it could be, you know, Elkanah, why is he going all the time? Because he has a wife without kids. He loves his wife. The wife is miserable. And, you know, it's always better to pray in the Mishkan. If you have a better chance, your prayers will be answered. So that could be, I don't want to take away from Elkanah's greatness, but, you know, everyone needs something to inspire them to do it. So it could be that's, you know, and you see the juxtaposition of the psukim, and the way the mom says, you see that she gets upset because the prayers aren't being answered. You know, so like you could see, you know, when do you see a guy, a lot of times, guy doesn't come to Minyan, never comes to Minyan, all of a sudden he comes to Minyan. So you wonder, what's he coming to Minyan for? So it's very rare that he says, well, you know, I thought I really should come to Minyan from now on. So that would be amazing if that would happen, and once in a while that happens, but the majority of times is either someone sick in the family, God forbid, or his wife's in the 9th month of pregnancy, you know, so they get a little bit afraid that they want to, you know, have God on their side at these last few moments, or something's terrible happening in business. So they come to shul, you know. So okay, we're happy they're in shul, but there's an agenda, kosher agenda. And then after the baby's born, after the serious thing is gone, the guy's gone also, right? So I'm just saying.
That's a long time.
I'm trying to just analyze the human aspect over it, because you have to ask yourself always the question: why him and nobody else?
Is not getting charity if one is a rich man, is that avera or?
If a person is a rich man and he doesn't give at least 10% of his money to charity, that is inappropriate behavior. It's not proper. I'm just saying that there had to be a reason why would Elkanah be this way. You know, just like the Levi who was involved in Pesel Micha. Why is he involved in Pesel Micha? Well, he had trouble with Parnassa. So that, you know, so doesn't excuse what he does, but there has to be a reason for behavior. So you have all the Jewish people, you have Chavni and Pinchas are not good role models in the temple. People say, what a drag to go to the temple, to schlep. But, you know, if you don't have a child, if you love your wife, right, and your wife is just heartbroken, and every day she's crying, and every day she's miserable, and the husband wants to do something for the wife, and the only thing that he can still do, go to the temple. So, of course, he's going to go to the temple. No. So once you go to the temple already, you know, that was the agenda, the kosher agenda. So, but, you know, I don't want to be the only guy going to the temple. I mean, after all, it's important to go to the temple. Right? So now you impress the importance upon others. You never know. If both his wives had lots of children, who knows if he would have had that initial. You understand?
Yeah.
But, so, okay, doesn't matter. But he did great things. By picking up on his kosher agenda. So you could understand, maybe the whole reason she didn't have children was so that he would be able to get himself and others to go to Mishkan. So I think when you see that a person sees that they are suffering, there's a reason why God's making that happen, because he wants something good to come out of it. Right? They could have been wallowing in their own pain and said, oh, it's so terrible, we hate God and this and that. That's one way a person can go. We say, listen, we gotta do what we gotta do, you know, and we should go 3 times a year. I think that'll be a good thing to help us with the prayers. Okay, so that's a good way to respond. And once you're doing that, you say, well, I want other people to come along also. Why aren't other people coming along? Now, if you would have had kids, you wouldn't have come and you wouldn't have been asking the question. But if, okay, so God pushes us to take advantage of the calamities in life to grow and to help others grow from that experience. Yeah, question?
I'm just wondering, I know everybody should be going, but if he knows that Nina is going to antagonize Hannah, why does he bring her along?
Okay, why does he bring her along? Well, anyway, they are a family. So it's not a question of only then. It was constant antagonizing. So it doesn't matter where you go, if you leave them behind, he can't take one and not the other. That you can't do. So he can't say, Panima, you stay home with the kids, I'm taking Chana. Like, that's like pretty insulting. So you have to be both. But let me now share with you an idea, and you'll understand what's going on over here. The Gemara in Baba Basra says that there are two individuals, let's say, who were involved in what we call an Avera Lishma, doing a sin for the sake of heaven. And the ones they bring out is the Satan, the adversary, the Yetzer Hara. He gets people into trouble, but it's L'shem Shemayim because that's his job. His job is to entice people to sin. But the one we want to know more about, more says, is Penina. What did Penina do? Well, what Penina did is she would intentionally upset Chana. She'd say, for example, Chana, when you go to Sobeys, when you're picking up some bottles, baby bottles, could you, oh, I forgot, you don't have any children. Yeah, forget about picking up the baby bottles. Or that kind of discussion. She always, you know, talk about having kids. She says, oh yeah, I forgot, you don't have any kids. Right? Which is hurtful. A person who doesn't have children, you don't talk that much about kids. You know, it's a very important idea. Let's say you're at a simcha, and let's say you have a bunch of young couples, and you have three or four couples that they have like two, three little kids, and you have there a couple that's married the same amount of time and has no children, right? Invariably, when you have young mothers, when they're at simchas, usually they talk about what interests them, and it's usually their kids. There's nothing wrong with that. That's their world. It's their kids. So you can imagine, you know, they all come to the wedding, and they have their little purse with the little pictures, and say, would you like to see the pictures of my tzaddikal over here? And looking at the pictures, you know, say, yeah, look at mine. And then somebody without any kids. Right? The cruelest thing you could do would be showing baby pictures around the table for someone when there's someone on the table who has no kids. It's just not sensitive, right? Now there's some people who are just not sensitive, and then there's people who go out of their way to do it because they know it will hurt the other person. So Penina did that to hurt Chana. So the Gemara says she did it l'shem Shemayim. She did it for the sake of heaven. Why? So because we know that God listens to the prayers of a broken-hearted person. A person with a broken spirit, Hashem, that person is very humble before God. That person connects more to God, and Hashem is more receptive to the prayers of a broken-spirited person. So therefore, Penina understood, and she felt, and we'll see in a minute, we'll see Reb Tzadok has some beautiful things to say. So she felt Chana wasn't really praying strong enough to Hashem. She was right. Chana was not praying strong enough to Hashem. So he's got to get her to dig in deeper. So what do? You make her feel bad. And by making her feel bad, she'll cry out even more to Hashem. Now, Reb Tzadok says something very interesting here. He says Chana was not jealous of her rival wife. And she really intrinsically wasn't lusting and dying to have children. Because she knew that law, a woman is not commanded to be fruitful and multiply. A man is commanded to be fruitful and multiply. A woman's not. She's not commanded. She can assist the man in his mitzvah. So okay, so Hashem didn't bless her to the mitzvah. Hashem didn't bless the mitzvah. She was a tzaddikus in terms that she came to terms with the realities. Life is going, you know, it's a very unusual woman that can do that. Most women, it would be devastating. I never had a child. It's, you know, but she came to terms with this. And he contrasts her to Rachel. He contrasts her to Rachel. Rachel When she didn't have children, she was so upset. And she took the high ground. And she mamish nudged Yaakov, says, how come you're not praying for me? How come you're not doing this? And she gets into quarrels with Yaakov in terms of responsibility and this and that. So Rachel was really very unique in her tremendous urge. It was an all-consuming desire to have children. Now you could say it was because this was building the foundations of the Jewish people. The 12 tribes were the foundation of Israel, and she had special qualities that would be missing amongst the Jewish people. She gave it her all to have children. But the truth of the matter is, God's original judgment was that she wasn't supposed to have children. And I don't want to get into the details, but Tzadok says, and because she really pushed the agenda maybe a little more than she should have, she was punished. And therefore she died in childbirth when she gave birth to Binyamin. So there's a price she paid for wanting these children. In other words, sometimes God says, you know, I know what I'm doing. Really, you shouldn't be having children. But if you're going to push me, I'll give you the children, but there's a price to be paid, you know, and you will not be around for them. So, you know, prayer works, but sometimes be careful. You might get what you pray for. So she got what she prayed for, and the second child is what killed her. So that was the Rachel approach. We're not analyzing and criticizing. We're just saying this was her approach. Right? Rachel was always that way. Rachel Mavaka Alponel. She cries for children. That's what it, she was the selfless Jewish mother who, she didn't care nothing about herself. So even if I die, I have to bring these children into the world. Hashem said, no, maybe you don't need to die. Maybe you can mother the other children without that. But that's what she wanted. That's what you got. Chana understood this. Chana understood, and she said, listen, I'm not going to go the Rachel approach. I'm not going the Rachel approach. If God doesn't want me to have a child, I don't have to fight him. And therefore, she was content. As long as, you'll see in the next pasuk, what did Elkanah say to his wife? Why are you so sad? Am I not better to you than 10 children? So she had what every woman really wants, her husband's love. Right? So at the end of the day, if a woman has a husband who really loves her, it can overcome the disadvantage of not having children. Because, okay, she'll nurture the husband, whatever. There's something, that's what they want. So she has that. So Chana was very happy, not very happy, but she was contented, so to speak. Okay, I won't have children. That's the mazel Hashem gave me. I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. We don't know how many years exactly it was, but it must have been many years. At least 10, because Penina had 10 kids, so it was married before Penina. You could suggest maybe they were married 10 years even, because that's what Sarah waited for them to be 10 years in Eretz Yisrael, till she said that Hagar should marry. So you could guesstimate that maybe like 25 years or whatever. So it's a long time. And she said, okay, you know, I gave up. I'm not going to be neurotic. I'm going to stop going to the doctors. We tried and this and that. But they still, every time they went to Shiloh, they would still daven. But obviously, Chana didn't really, probably by then, it was just going through the motions. And she was upset, but not digging deep enough to pray deeply to Hashem. So Penina meant for the sake of heaven, and she says, I'm going to make her miserable. When you make a person miserable, like, right, so I'm giving her a new tzara, a new problem. And I ain't giving up on that one. Whenever I see her, I'm going to make her feel bad. She's going to feel so bad. She's going to pray to God, just give me. And there's no way out. You can't get her divorced. And you see her all the time. She's going to pray, Hashem, just give me a chance. She'll leave me alone. Right? This will get her to dig deeper. So Penina meant L'shem Shemayim. So now let's hear what Reb Chaim Shmulevitz has to say. Because we know what happened, unfortunately, is Penina lost many, if not all, her children. They died. Machlokas, they all died, or many of them died, but she suffered greatly that many of them died. So, and that was a punishment. So now we'll read just a few lines from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz in one of his Shmuzim. He says, as we find by Penina, where the rabbi said she was l'shem shemayim, she had intent for the sake of heaven. But still in all, she was punished in a very severe way that all her children died, as you see in the Song of Devorah in the next parak, says Rabbas Banim Umlala. The one of many children is forlorn. That's what I say, Chana. Sorry. Chana said the one of many children is forlorn, hinting the fact that she lost all her children. But still in all, look what he says. Reb Chaim says, Afal pi shepenina tzadekes gemura haisa. Penina was a complete tzadekes. Okay? You know, some people have this thing that Penina was a rotten stinker. No, tzadekes gemura. Okay, if the Gemara says it was a very l'shem shemayim, that means it was l'shem shemayim. Tzadekes gemura. Listen to this. Ubevaray hayakoshalo ma'od l'tzares chana. And certainly it was very hard for Penina to be the one to have to aggravate Chana. She didn't feel good doing it. She didn't enjoy it. Saying, oh good, now I have a heter to do what I always wanted to do. Like I always had to repress my desire to hurt people's feelings, but I knew it was enough air. I didn't want to get punished. So now it's okay. So now, oh great, it's a field day. I'll hop a ride and be able to, within the context of permissibility, do what I always want. No, she didn't want to ever hurt anybody. But she knew that this Chana, she isn't coming into play. She isn't really digging deep in her prayers, and she could have a child. So if I make her miserable enough, that will cause her enough anguish, she'll really dig deeper. But he said it was very hard for her to do this. She only did what she did to bring Chana to real prayer. And we'll see shortly, you know, it could very well be that Chana never prayed. Could be, as we'll see in a minute. Penina was literally being moser nefesh. She self-sacrificed for doing what she did. You know, can you imagine if someone's really a nice person, a pleasant person, and now to put on a show of being cruel and terrible. Now, the person doesn't even enjoy doing that. And you realize that it's an uncomfortable thing to do. It's hard for most people to feel that, to appreciate that, because many people, we like yelling and screaming at people and making people and antagonizing people. Okay, so we don't, but you know, we don't mind doing it. You're talking about a tzadekis, so it's like just repugnant to even do it. Hold on. Ubekolzeh manoira einshei, but still know how awesome was the punishment. Vekol kach loma. Why? Why did she get such a punishment? Because if you hurt someone else, whatever your thoughts are, no matter how holy your thoughts are, it's like you take your hand, you stick it into a fire. When you do things that are not proper, even in a superficial way. You know, when you say insulting comments, that's putting your hand in a fire. You have a good reason, a bad reason. You know, let's say you have, God forbid, a family member caught in a fire, and you're going to run in and save them. Right? It's good. It's a nice thing, yeah? But you're going right through the flames. You're not going to come out with second degree burns? But I was trying to save their life. Doesn't matter. Fire is fire. So the idea being, you know, insulting a person, hurting a person's feelings, with all the altruistic motives, is still going in a fire. And all your good intentions in the world can't change anything. The danger that lies in the sin when one transgresses in interpersonal relationships is a natural reality. Mamish kishem she'esh sorefes b'derech hateva. Just like fire naturally burns strife between people, saying hurtful words is fire, whatever your intentions are or not. Unbelievable. So this is mamish mesiris nefesh. She's doing what she can to get Chana to have a child. She does not enjoy a minute of what she's doing, and still she gets punished. And he brings other examples. Moore gives an example of a person, this rabbi who would go away to study yeshiva and would come home every year on Erev Yom Kippur. I guess and stay for Sukkot. But he was gone a whole year, but he came back once a year. So the wife always was looking forward to that. So one particular year, He was late. He was a little bit involved in his Torah learning. He got a little bit too submerged in his Torah learning. He didn't realize the time. So he came late. And the wife was waiting. She says, usually he comes home by now. Oh, maybe he's going to come now. Maybe he's going to come now. He's still not here, but he's going to come now. Still not here. You know, Lahavdil, like if you saw the Waltons, the first Waltons movie, The Homecoming, where the father was supposed to come, heir of their Yontif. And, you know, it was terrible weather, and they heard there was a bus that got in an accident, and it was, you know, their Hiluk Yontif, and the whole family's there, and it was very nice. Even I cried when I saw it. It was like, it was very touching, you know, and she's crying, and this, that. And then the husband comes in the last minute, she says, where were you? It's the same thing. So the wife starts crying. She's crying. She starts crying. So then the guy, as he was traveling, but he was late, he was like under a roof or something. The roof collapsed on him and killed him. So he got punished. Why? Because he was directly the cause to make his wife cry. He didn't intend on doing it. You know what? You maybe should have thought, it was Erev Yom Kippur, your wife really expects you. That should have been the first thing on your mind, not do another piece of Gemara. Now, let's think about this. Now, you think the wife was happy that the husband died? I don't think so. I don't think so. Even if the wife, but you know, that's the rule. When you interpersonal relationship, you hurt someone else, that's putting your hand in fire. That's it. And there's gonna be what to have to be paid for that. So that's what we're saying. To appreciate Penina's selflessness, that she was willing to hurt the other, so she would pray better. At the end of the day, God says, you know, maybe it'll work, but the bottom line is, you can't hurt people's feelings. You want to discipline somebody, you have a child, you have to discipline them. The Torah allows you to discipline the child, but you can't hurt their feelings. You could say, calmly, listen, tzaddikul, I told you 27 times not to come late. I've warned you of this. Now, if I don't give you some kind of discipline, you're not going to think that this is an important value. Okay, so this is the following discipline. The kid's yelling, she was not fair. Sir. You did it sweetly, you did it kindly, you didn't want to hurt them, you did what you had to do. That's not going to punish you for that, you know. But if you say, no, I'm going to make the child miserable, you know, I'm going to call him an idiot, a dummy, I'm going to insult him, I'm going to this and that, and that's going to be his punishment, all right, that's already not nimus tov. You can't do that. So Penina, the most she could have done, says, I really feel sorry for you. I'll daven for you. I'll this for you to show compassion. But she's not going to have a kid unless she digs deeper. Then you know what? You don't have to be more religious than God. You know, God doesn't hurt people intentionally, so you can't do it either. Even if it's for a good reason. The pain you give a person, the ends do not justify the means in Judaism. The ends do not justify the means. The means have to be proper. And if that means the ends isn't going to be, then you know what? Then the end isn't going to be. It should never, but she'll never be a kid. You know what? Let the Rabbi Shalom worry about it. Yeah, according to the rules, if you don't pray from a broken heart, it's not going to be. You know what? God could find another way. God could have, if Penina wouldn't have, Shmuel had to be born. Yeah, had to be born from Hannah's prayers. Agreed. But why, Penina, why did you have to do this? Was this the only way? But God could have given her a deathly disease. Could have given her a terrible disease that she'd have to pray to Davin Hashem to get out of that. And Mamela Davin for her child as well. Whatever. So as much as you feel justified to be extremely careful, because the results, unfortunately, are taka very bad. Okay. Tomorrow we will move to Mesilas Yesharim with the Bavavi commentary. We come back to Navi next Monday and Tuesday. We have to keep that in mind. You had a question, Shelley?
Yeah, he answered it. Okay.